This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is episode 123. The date is the 20th of March and it's just gone 6 o'clock-ish. As you can see, there's four of us on the screen today. We have a fantastic guest for you. Author, writer, columnist, animator, you name it, this guy does it. We've got Algie Hall from City Wire with us today. We're going to talk about elite companies. Best in the world, world-class companies we're going to be talking about mainly today. I've also got my good co-host as well with me as well, Henry Viola here, and Philip Oakley. Also, obviously, writes for City Wire and talks about elite companies as well. So we're going to talk very, very briefly about where the markets ended up today. I'm going to go straight to Algie talking about elite companies. The FTSE ended up at 7737 today, just down a single point-ish, having travelled from a low of 7711 to a high of 7749, a very narrow range today, as we're waiting around for Americans to decide what they were going to do with the markets. The best performing market today across the US, UK markets was the FTSE 250. Yeah, not much going on today for us, really. 51 points up, FTSE 250. And other than that, all very negative, all very flat. But I want to give a shout out, because I saw someone tweeting about this today, about one of our companies that has done extremely well in the past 12 months. And that's none other. And we're talking about lead companies. So I just thought I'd just throw this in with regards to the prestigiousness of this quality of company. And it used to be a dog. What company am I talking about? Rolls-Royce is up 188% in the past 12 months. Everyone's talking about NVIDIA. NVIDIA's up 241% in the past 12 months. So Rolls-Royce, repping the UK. We'll have somebody repping the UK because no one else sees it at the minute on a global stage. Right, ladies and gents, we're going to bounce straight in. We said our hellos to Henry and we said our hellos to Phil. We're going to say a big hello to Algie Hall. Welcome back, sir.
Hello. Hi. I'm really pleased to be here.
Thank you for wanting to come back. The beauty of us doing this piece of work and these podcasts is that when we get the caliber of individuals like Phil wanting to be a co-host and you wanting to come back and talk to us, we must be doing something right, mate.
Yeah, no. So, I love the podcast. So it's a delight to be here.
Brilliant. Thank you. Now, you put on your, you knew you were going to be on video, so you put on a special shirt. For those that are not watching now, Algie's put on his film star shirt, so you need to go on video to YouTube to check out his swag, okay?
Is that what we're calling it, the film star shirt? I was going to go That's it.
Come on, Algie. You lead, mate. Let's talk elite companies. No more about the shirt.
No more about the shirt. I know I didn't mean to distract anything from the shirt, because I always listen to the podcast on my earphones, normally when I'm running in the gym. So I didn't actually know I was going to be on camera. But, I like to dress like a film star every day. What can I say?
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Yeah, no, Elite Companies is it's a project that I'm involved with, and I'm really super pleased that Phil's become involved with also. Writing for us, and it's something which CityWire set up. They've actually only really been operating as elite companies for a year, and it's an idea that I think is hugely exciting, and CityWire is like really well placed to execute. So I suppose the easiest way I can explain it is if you imagine you had a best friend who is a fund manager, and they kept on coming over and whispering to you their favorite stock ideas. That's essentially what elite companies is about. And one of the really interesting things, which actually got me interested in this whole idea before I knew CityWire was doing anything connected to it, is there's quite a lot of research, which has kind of come out over about the last 15 years, I think, which suggests that fund managers' favorite stocks, the ones which they have their biggest bets placed on, tend to outperform everything else they own. And in fact, the other stuff in their portfolio tends to diminish their overall performance. So what we do, we kind of concentrate on these kind of favorite stocks. We don't have fund managers whispering to us, but what we do is a lot more systematic. So Citywire is it's for about 25 years now, it's rated fund managers. So it's got this amazing database where it can go back, not going through how funds performed, but how individuals performed. So it pieces together career histories and it can identify the very best fund managers. So Citywire does that for elite companies in a way which is a bit different, but similar to how they rate managers generally. And then what we do, we dig into their portfolios and find out what they're all holding. We find out what their real favorite stocks are. And we aggregate all our intelligence. And we rate companies based on that. So we give the real best ones a AAA rating. And then you get double A's, single A's and pluses. It's been fascinating kind of finding out, you know, about what companies come out from, you know, from the ratings, and also just, you know, which ones are kind of, you know, doing well in terms of momentum, which ones are cheap. We look at all these kind of things. Just because it's taken me and also Phil kind of all around the world looking at, you know, different companies, which I don't think I would have ever alighted on, and finding these massively interesting investment stories. And also, you know, just, you know, we do catch on to some of those, you know, really hot stories as they're developing. So Rolls Royce, I think, you know, hadn't been rated at all at the beginning of 23. And then it kind of started climbing up the ratings. And by the end, it was, you know, AAA rated. So, you know, you could say it missed some of the action, but it's definitely had a bit more of the action since that stock kind of, you know, got its, you know, 3.7s, whatever you'd call it, in terms of those AAAs. And then also, you know, because this is a way of generating ideas, which is kind of objective, essentially, because we're really just following the smart money. It kind of just makes you think again. And this is what I've always loved about, I'm a great proponent of using data to generate ideas for readers. This is a database thing, but it's based on human decision making and like decision making of really smart. So it kind of points you in these directions which you wouldn't normally go, and just makes you look at the investment cases for stocks. You know, in a new light, I suppose. I think, you know, one of the companies we highlighted at the start of the year was Renault. And Renault, you know, is kind of, you know, it's heavily unionized. It's got a big government stake. It's got a rather tangled web of, you know, a history. It's struggling to keep up in the EV market. The internal combustion engine market is like, you know, really, you know, it looks like it could be moribund. And so you kind of think, why are these people holding Renault? And you know, it turns out it's just incredibly cheap and, you know, not doing so badly. It's got a chief executive who's kind of managing to help it perform, and the shares have done, you know, incredibly well since the start of the year. I think they're up by 25% or a third, and that, you know, there's just an example of the type of situation which normally I personally would kind of run a mile from and like not even bother looking at, which you know, these objective ways of come highlighting stocks and knowing that they're, you know, you're looking at what really smart people are actually doing with their actual money. It kind of makes you kind of dig in a bit and kind of see if there is any value, you know, what the value is there that they see.
Yeah, I love what you said there, Algy, because one of the things that we do get, we get sidetracked, don't we, by the noise or the story that we're hearing from whatever's going on in the media. But what you said there is about objective ways of where the smart money is going, yeah, and you're seeing stuff, what they're doing, before it gets into the main media, I think, you get an early sort of heads up and say, actually, that's where the money's going. And you're going, well, why are they going to Renault? Then you dig a bit deeper, you go, ah, I see why they're going to Renault. Because otherwise you wouldn't do it, would you? You'd go, I'm not going there. A year and a half ago, people going, I'm not going near Rolls-Royce. You know, and now they're all going, I wish I'd bought Rolls-Royce at 70p.
Absolutely. And I mean, also, I think always the temptation is to gravitate to the stories which we already feel that we understand. And those are the stories which everyone else feels they understand. And they're normally the areas where there aren't actually any real opportunities. You know, maybe you're playing a bit of momentum, but often you're just jumping on, you know, once, you know, everything is in the market and everything is in the price. So really, you know, the only way to make money through investing in individual stocks or stock picking is to find something which is surprising in some way, something which, you know, where the story isn't well known and where in which, you know, surprises you normally. It's I kind of always think, you know, is a gauge if when we think something is you know, bad and, you know, kind of like something, you know, something we shouldn't do, like buying a falling market. You know, it's often a very good gauge to the fact that, you know, we should be doing the opposite. You know, that's, you know, when markets are down and, like, you know, falling, it's because everyone's feeling the same thing and everyone's, you know, obsessed with the same narratives. And actually, you know, our own instincts can be a very good the counter guide of, you know, what we should be doing. So I don't know. I've had a few very uncomfortable times of buying the market after big falls, just with you know, index funds, and hating myself for it for, you know, a good few months before realizing that actually, even though what I thought I was doing was very stupid, turned out to be very smart. But maybe that's just me.
No, it's me too, and I'm sure Henry's got a few examples as well. The markets are there to make a fool of all of us, and that's what it does invariably. I think what we've got to do is to be brave when others are running away, I think, often than not. But invariably, there's going to be, I don't know, 50% of the time when we choose to buy individual stocks which haven't got the elite metrics that you talk about, Algie. So, you know, if they are declining, sometimes they're cheap and they're bad for a reason, and they're not going to return to good form. So having the right metrics and having the right management are essential. I've picked a few stocks in the past few years which have turned out to be absolute dogs, and then the visited the vets and not come back, you know. And that's just you've got to have a healthy pup, haven't you? Healthy dog rather than, you know, one that's going to be not coming back from the vets. Phil, you're part of the team as well. So what's your thoughts about the work being done in some of the stocks that are being talked about there?
I mean, from a personal point of view, it's been very educational. It's I'm writing about companies that I've never written about before. So, you know, we will write about anything in any market, any major market, really. So we could be writing about Chinese electric vehicle companies, Italian oil companies, Japanese companies, American companies. I think the other thing as well is that you're dealing with managers with lots of different investing styles. So you can capture, you know, growth shares, value shares, distress shares. And, you know, from a writer's point of view, it's great because you're not using any of your judgment. You're taking the, you know, the judgment of others based on, you know, a well-proven system. You know, what's reassuring is that Citywire does rate fund managers that are, you know, it does identify good managers. I'm not saying that good managers don't make the odd mistake, but, you know, looking at people who have a good record and looking at what they're picking is a good, solid basis. And then the job of someone like me or Algie or Miles Costello, who also is a writer for the team, is to then explain that to our readers. And it's I'm really enjoying it. I think for a private investor, We have a weekly newsletter that goes out, and it's just a fantastic source of idea generation. And Algy gets his, you know, his magic wand out and does all his number crunching and stuff, and adds a bit of flavour to it. So no, I think it's a great project.
Brilliant, you know, brilliant.
I think what Phil was saying also, because I mean, as a writer, people often look for to investment writers to kind of, you know, tell them what to do. So, you know, buy, sell, whatever, which actually, you know, it's impossible. And like there's this you're allowed to as an investment writer, because in the regulation there's a you don't have to comply with the kind of rules that a financial advisor would. So journalists can always write that. But journalists, you know, you can't tell someone, you know, you can't buy something for someone. And someone who doesn't do their own research is kind of in constant jeopardy, because they won't know what they're owning, why they're owning it, you know, what they expect to see, which is going to confirm to them that the investment they've made is good. So I think, you know, what is really nice is Phil described is that, you know, we've got this massive pool of really great ideas, and you know we know they're great ideas because really clever people have you know holding these shares, you know, in, you know, really, you know, in large amounts in their funds, and you know they've got masses of research capabilities. So we're, you know, we can explain to people, we can go and do that research for private investors or any other reader, just to say this is the investment case, this is, you know, what there is on offer. And it then, you know, over to you, which is, you know, which I think is great, because, you know, we know there are people who are smart who are buying these things and holding these shares. And we're not having to pretend to be, you know, false gurus going, yeah, well, you know, whatever we say buy, you know, will go up. And whenever we say sell, go down, which is, you know, nonsense. And, you know, every you know, everyone who, you know, if people don't know it's nonsense within, you know, a couple of weeks of reading any kind of tip sheet, they'll know it's nonsense kind of thing. And not to say that the research that journalists put in isn't good. You know, journalists do, like, you know, I think very, you know, thorough jobs a lot of the time, and like really, you know, dedicated to what they do and have a lot of integrity in what they do. It's just they're not clairvoyants kind of thing. But they have to, you know, through you know, through what sells, they're kind of often forced to take that role of, you know, pretending to, you know stuff that they don't know. Like, you know, this one's going to double. Whatever. If you ever read that, run a mile, I'd say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Any thoughts on what's been said so far? Because we're covering a lot of ground here regarding some of the stuff that you and I have probably had dealings with over the past, you know, decade or so on and off regarding investing. Some of the metrics we wish we'd knew, you know, tonight, last week, last year, we wish we'd known 10 years ago. Quality.
I'm a huge fan of elite companies, to be honest. Partly because of the quality of the writing, but also the format. So like Algy says, you know, you pick up a newspaper and you read a column and it says buy company X because Y. It's usually the same sort of names. If you're a UK stock picker, you see the same sort of names. You tend to get funneled into very small bits of the market. Whereas what I discovered when I started reading this website was actually partly it's the global angle, but partly it's also the description of how mega themes play out. So we talk a lot at the moment about AI. Everybody's talking about AI. Everybody's talking about ChatGPT. Everyone's got an opinion on it. But how many people have actually sat down and figured out how this stuff works? Is there a data center? Is there a chip in a data center that makes it work? Is there a computer program that runs on the chip in the data center that makes it work? Is there a network of data centers? Who knows? All we know is that there's this thing called AI, most people anyway. Whereas when you go to elite companies and you read Phil's writing and you read Algy's writing, you start to learn how these industries actually piece together, and you realize there's a lot of moving parts in this. And the opportunities aren't necessarily in the one big name that the media has picked up on. So with AI at the moment, obviously it's Nvidia. Everybody's talking about it. But what about the firms that, you know, are mining silicon for the chips? What about the firms that are doing testing on the chips? What about the firms that own the data centers or do quality control? You know, there are lots of firms out there that are playing into this AI story that the media is totally ignoring. And if all you're reading is the mainstream press, you know, you're going to miss these opportunities. And that's where, for me, Elite Companies really throws up some really fascinating names. And it also punts you in the direction of industries that you'd never really think about. So Algie's just mentioned Renault, for example, car manufacturing. You mention car manufacturing to most people and their first name out of their mouth will probably be Tesla. I've heard of Tesla. It's on the stock market. Either I want to buy it or I don't want to own it. And they'll go no further than that. They'd never think to go and look at this company, Renault, look into what's going on with it, research it, figure out that a load of senior investors with research teams hold it, that funds have got significant cash in it. They totally miss that story. And so to me, that's part of the thrill of reading this Elite Companies research. It's really, really insightful stuff. So yeah, if you've not gone and had a look, go and have a look.
Henry, brilliant. Thank you. I'm really glad you like it.
Big fan.
We all like it, Helgi. You've got a big fan base, I think, across UK FinTwit and I'm sure globally as well as it grows more and more and more. I think the beauty of it is that folks have had enough of their investments, portfolios, etc., averagingly moving up, tepidly moving up, and they want to not necessarily outperform UK markets, but they don't want to be losing money. And if it means that they've got to be less UK centric and actually choose the best companies rather than the best UK companies, I'm sure, you know, at some stage, whether there's Elite Companies that have made it on your list, which are UK centric, you know, make most of the money here. And that's about choosing the best companies rather than just looking at one little space all the time or across the FTSE.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is, having come from a background where I've was always writing about UK, almost always writing about UK companies, it is amazing for discovering, you know, stocks, with really interesting stocks in different overseas markets. Because, it doesn't do borders, the process. It just kind of, you know, wherever the money is, that's where it goes. But saying that, actually, is, you know, something which I think is encouraging for people who are, you know, focused on the UK. The UK does have a lot of very highly rated companies. Well, I mean, I'm talking 21, I think, at our latest March data, 21 top rated companies. But actually, that's quite a lot in terms of all the other market. It puts it, I think, third, although the US has 300 and something top rated companies, which tells you something else. India's number two.
Yeah. It's a much larger country. We'll just say it's a much larger country. Yeah.
Let's say that.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Right, Algie, if we can be so bold and ask you to just discuss some of the elite companies that you've found of late. I was going to talk a bit later on about the recent article you wrote on AI, but we've done AI to death. We'll talk about it a bit later on. But,
yeah, we just want to know what's going to double next week, Algie.
No.
Having said I'm not a clairvoyant, let me make outlandish predictions, Henry.
Because what I'm trying to get is the diversification. You and Phil have already touched on it. You know, it could be a company from Japan. It can be a company from Italy. It can be a company from France. You know, it's not all these elite companies are not all based in the US. And it's about getting people to think outwardly and actually think, have I got a platform which I'm using currently for my investments that enables me to buy that Japanese stock, that French stock, yeah, that Canadian stock? You know, rather than thinking, okay, I can't buy that because my platform doesn't allow me to do that. You know, maybe it does, but they don't even know that company exists right now, other than Renault.
I mean, I suppose some interesting things we've seen this month. So I've just been going through. We do a monthly report. So Phil mentioned we have a newsletter. Subscribe to that, and you'll get all the stories we're putting out each week. But you'll also get every month our report, which basically goes through the top 10s for globally, regionally, by sector, and by country, when a for every country which has over 5 top rated elite companies. So it kind of just, you know, and then it does biggest rises as well for quite a few at the various tables. But some of the interesting things we've seen biotech getting quite a lot more popular over the last few months. So I know there's been, you know, there's quite a bit of noise about biotech. It's bounced a bit. There are more IPOs coming through. I think the M&A has been quite interesting, for most of last year, actually. But that's still going on. And you've got a lot of companies which are still very cheap, valued at less than net cash. But so we have quite a few biotechs which are moving to AAA. And I think we had, I think it was 5 in March. So you've got BridgeBio, Biocon, ADMA Biologics, and United Therapeutics, which grows organs amongst other things, and I think it specializes in rare diseases. So those are some names which look interesting from the biotech world, which we may well be looking into over the coming weeks. And then consumer cyclicals also. There's a very noteworthy increase since October in the number of really highly rated consumer cyclical stocks. And I think really that probably just chimes with the idea that the US may be having a soft landing, with this kind of like fabled thing, which I don't think we've ever gone from a situation when inflation's been so high to when it's been kind of under control, where you've not had a recession. But it does look increasingly likely that, you know, that could happen. So we've had, there's a company called Thor Industries, which is actually quite an amazing company. It makes motorhomes, but it's set up in Amish country in the US, specifically so it can weather downturns. So, you know, you can imagine this is hugely capital intensive, this business. You know, companies like that, you know, when people stop buying from them, they, you know, it can be a complete disaster, especially, you know, if they've got debt. This one fortunately isn't over geared, but the Amish, because their culture, they like flexible working. So as soon as there's a recession, Thor Industries just kind of says, oh, there's no work for you today. And so it kind of makes its way through these periods. And that's come back. And that's forecast to recover from 2025. It has a July year end. So that's quite an interesting one. There's one called Tractor Supply in the US also, which is this kind of crazy, farm shop type business, which has kind of suddenly got popular with millennials. What else are we seeing in the cyclicals? We've got Cheesecake Factory. We've got two, actually, Henry, you may be interested in this because I know you're interested in property. We've got two shopping mall owners, American shopping mall owners. So Mace Rich, which actually has been AAA for quite a while, but also somewhere called Tanger Factory Outlet Centres, which does these big shopping malls dedicated to, you know, selling excess stock for big brands. So they're they've been doing really well. It's like, you know, this like story about shopping malls being dead and buried, which we had a couple of years ago. The tune seems to be changing a bit. We've also Inditex, which has just had very good results. That's done very well in March. It's shot back to a AAA rating, and I think the shares recently hit a record high. So that's a kind of a more European consumer story. And Unilever as well. That's one of the biggest climbers in the ratings in March. It's amongst the top 10 biggest risers. And they've obviously just come out with them. I think Phil has actually been saying for quite a long time they should just sell their ice cream business. And the new boss has come out and says he's selling the ice cream business, and as well as doing the other things, you know, cutting costs and trying to pep up growth a little bit as well. So, but that's something which top managers seem to be getting behind that recovery story. Is that, and Phil, is that right? The ice cream business. I think I'm sure I've spoken to you before, and you said that's the kind of, you know, that looks ripe for a spin out.
Can I interject at this point? I think it was Phil saying he needs to stop eating ice cream, LG. Yeah.
Come on, that's Phil. True.
Well.
You've got fund managers listening to you from around the world, and global CEOs listening to you around the world, mate.
I'm not sure I remember. I think I always said that I think the ice cream business was one of their best businesses. That and along with the beauty products business, the rest of it, the sort of household and the sort of nutrition side, less so. But we'll see. Maybe you should sell the Unilever shares and buy Ben and Jerry's or whatever it's going to be called. You know, because what tends to happen is some of these spin-offs do quite well. I mean, they've got out of things like the spreads business. But I don't know. I'm not so sure it's a good thing, actually, them selling the ice cream, selling one of their best businesses, I think. Well, not selling, but splitting it off.
We have, of course, had the GSK Haleon split, where those two, both of those two I'm going to go back to the ratings, have become more popular since they're both popular with fund managers, and since the spin-off, well, obviously only one of them existed before. But I mean, yeah, that could be I suppose that in terms of a spin-off and seeing how you could create value from it, that's the GSK ones, a more of a classic situation than Unilever, where you're kind of where the businesses are similar, and there doesn't look like there's a kind of real, you know, there's hidden value which can be released from the spin-off. But yeah, we'll have to watch and see. He's an interesting guy, though. Hein Schumacher, who's taken over Unilever. I think he's got quite good form, from what I know, from running a dairy conglomerate, not conglomerate, co-op, over in the Netherlands, I think, previously. But he did well there.
Well, you need quality management. This is quality leadership, you know. And if you can turn it around, like you say, a lot of the historic top 10, top 20 of our FTSE 100 have all gone relatively nowhere in the past 3, 4, 5 years. So they all need shaking up. You know, there's talk today and previous week about something needing to happen with Prudential, because that's gone nowhere for so long. You know, so a lot of these companies that are previous darlings of the FTSE have not really generated any return. So, you know, Unilever deciding to potentially do this split, all of a sudden everyone's going, yeah, we can see the value in that. And, you know, if we split that over there and split that over there, you know, some of the parts is worth, you know, 30, 40, 50% more than in the current share price. That's how you're going to release value, isn't it? You know, and get more people interested, potentially, from managers, etc. So let's
the interesting thing, Pete, is...
Go for it, Phil.
Sorry to interrupt. Sorry. I think the interesting thing is, you know, where's this ice cream business going to be listed? Because the headquarters of it is in Amsterdam. And, you know, we need good companies listed on the UK stock market. My fear would be that this business ends up being listed in Amsterdam.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. Yeah, that's another concern. I mean, has anyone put any value yet on this business, LG or Phil? As what's their guesstimate the value might be if they did spin it off?
I don't know. I haven't.
Because it's a large part of the revenue, wasn't it? Last time I looked.
I think it's mid-teens percent of their profit. I was quite surprised by how that it wasn't more. In terms of the stuff I've read in it, I haven't really looked into it deeply, but yeah, I was quite surprised that it wasn't more. But I think also the bits and pieces that I've read have suggested it's, you know, not it's less of a move about kind of unlocking value in this case, and more about simplifying the business. So, you know, you've got
right.
you constant, you know, focusing on less means you can do more with it. And maybe freeing up some more cash for, you know, spending on marketing and, you know, whatever else. I think, I think, you know, yeah, the jury's out a bit as far as the reactions I've, you know, I've seen.
Okie dokie. Okay. Go on, Phil.
Yeah.
Waving his hands.
I think the reason they're probably getting rid of it is because it's actually quite small in terms of their overall profits. It might be a very good business, but I don't think it's enough to really move the dial, you know, as far as Unilever's performance. And therefore, getting rid of it and focusing on the bigger stuff is probably where they go. I think I've seen values of about 8 billion is what I've just had a look at, that kind of figure. So, you know, it would be a FTSE 100 share if it was listed in London.
Okay, thank you for that, Phil. Okay, right. I think what I'll do at this stage, LG, is just ask Henry to talk about one of his stocks, and hopefully he's picked an elite stock, or maybe not.
Well, that's terrifying pressure. Thank you very much.
And then we'll go to, and then we'll have Phil sharing one of his if he's got one. Right, Henry, is it an elite stock or is it a...
I was going to say, I saw a comment on Twitter on our last podcast that this is like the dragon's den of investing. I'm hoping I'm not about to get fired. Or is that The Apprentice anyway? So I've got a UK company which deals with UK mortgage lending. It is the Mortgage Advice Bureau. The ticker is MAB1. And it's the UK's leading mortgage intermediary brand. Now, I imagine most of our listeners have probably either taken out a mortgage at some point in their life or known someone that does or has. And there's a good chance that when they did, they used something called a mortgage broker. And the mortgage broker effectively sits between the borrower and the thousands of lenders across the UK that lend money into the housing market. And they try to negotiate the best deal on behalf of the borrower or the home buyer. Now, Mortgage Advice Bureau has won over 200 national awards and has over 2,000 advisors across the UK, offering advice to UK consumers both face-to-face and over the phone on all aspects of the mortgage market. They handle over more than £16 billion of loans annually, and were the first and currently the only mortgage intermediary to have floated on the London Stock Exchange, having joined AIM in November 2014. Now, the company has a market cap of about £500 million. It's £477 million, I think, when I looked it up. And the shares are currently trading at a price of £8.36, give or take. They've come off the boil a little bit, mainly because as interest rates have gone up, the mortgage market has started to tighten. Borrowers have sort of withdrawn a little bit from taking on new mortgages, and lenders have started to put the rates up, which has dampened demand. But I've got a feeling that this business is one that is a really high-performing company. It's got really solid returns on capital at about 40%, and it has done for many years, as far as I can see, since it's listed. Now, although the mortgage market is a little bit tight at the moment, there is a massive undersupply of housing in the UK. So I don't think it's particularly likely that the market's going to stay frozen for very long. And there's already talk after inflation rates came out this morning at 3.4%, that the Bank of England might actually be looking at cutting rates already from their current levels of 5.25%. And I suspect that if that story keeps up, we're going to see an uptick in demand for mortgages, and therefore demand for mortgage broking services is likely to increase, in my opinion, as consumers are going to be increasingly keen to make sure they get the very best deals on the market and therefore someone like Mortgage Advice Bureau should be aptly placed to take advantage of that demand. The shares are available on a PE of about 23 times, so they're not particularly cheap, but they do pay a nice dividend of 3.5%, which is covered. And I think that could be one for listeners to go away and do a little bit of research on.
Very interesting indeed. I'll go to our guests first and then Phil. Algie, not going to ask you if you've got a mortgage, but, you know, have you ever used a broker, mate?
Yeah, no, I always use a mortgage broker. Who actually got me on the day of the disastrous mini budget, managed to get me a deal at the day before's rates, which was very when everyone was pulling their mortgages. So that was
wow.
He really earned his keep then, because people remortgage, because people are probably similar to me, and you know, if they've got a mortgage broker they trust, they'll keep on coming back. I imagine there's more recurring work there than one may necessarily at first think. And looking at the forecast, I'd have a sheet up which lets me look at all the stats I like to look at. But the forecast seems to have held up pretty well this year. Kind of, you know, they have been downgraded a tiny bit, but not much. And the growth record is extremely impressive. And I mean, also, you wouldn't expect a business like this to require much capital, but as you say, Henry, the return on capital is great. So if it's somehow managing to grow and doing it with very little capital, that's the key to creating wealth for shareholders. It looks very interesting. It looks like, you know, worth looking at, definitely, I'd say.
Thank you for that, Algie. Any thoughts, Phil, on that one? On MAB?
I think there's we could be at a bit of a turning point, you know, in terms of the housing market and interest rates. You know, inflation has come in lower. And I think one of the things that's driving that is energy bills. Energy bills are coming down quite significantly from the start of April, and are forecast to come down again in July, which should have a very positive impact, not only on inflation numbers and therefore interest rates, but also it just puts money back in people's pockets and therefore makes, you know, buying a house and paying for a mortgage more affordable than it was 6 months ago, a year ago. I think the other thing as well that's very possible is that, you know, we are going to get a change in government. I think that's within the next 9 months. And I think an incoming government will try and do something to stimulate the housing market. So I think the fundamentals for this company are improving. That said, the shares are up about 60% over the last 6 months. They've had a very strong run. And, you know, again, looking at the forecast, there's some pretty punchy, you know, sort of revenue growth, profit growth already being factored in by Citi analysts, which, you know, given the valuation that Henry's mentioned, it's not a share that I think looks great to buy right now, but certainly something to keep an eye on.
I think I'd be interested to know also how they're managing to get all that growth in, because it looks like they have got an acquisition in their history at some point. But I mean, as Phil's mentioned, the growth that's being forecast is it looks really impressive on paper, but that question of how they're achieving that.
I suspect part of it's being driven by the growth in house prices. So admittedly, there are some mortgage brokers that will work on a fixed fee basis, and there are some that will work on a commission basis. And they get commission from the lenders when they place a product. And as house prices are growing so rapidly, it may well be that that's contributing to the strong revenue growth of the company, in addition to the strong demand from buyers.
Nice one. Well, well done there, Henry. I'm going to go to Phil now. Phil, one of your stocks, mate. And it's going to get screened by Algae, mate. So is it Elite or is it not?
Okay. So this is a stock that I've actually written about twice this week. One on my blog, and I plug for my blog, which is investingstuff.substack.com. Thanks for all the people that have signed up, by the way. I've been really sort of chuffed to see the numbers coming through on that. But also I've put an article out on this company on SharePad today, Wednesday, ShareScope website. And the company is Reckitt Benckiser. And This is a company that's in a lot of trouble. There was an announcement last Friday that it had a judge had put a ruling against its infant formula business called Mead Johnson, which it bought back in 2017. And it was a ruling against it over a death of a child. And it was linked to Enfamil, which is one of its products. And the damages that were awarded for this one case was $60 million. And quite clearly, people looked at this announcement, added a few more possible cases, multiplied it by a very large number, and came to a very large number of what the potential bill theoretically could be. Reckitt is obviously denying any sort of liability. But it's a very, very big cloud under the company. And it's a company that's been struggling for some time. It was once seen as a bit of a stock market darling, you know, having very, very sort of popular, well-known consumer brands, you know, like Dettol, Strepsils, Gaviscon, that kind of thing, Nurofen, and you know, a very safe place to invest. And the company has been struggling. I think a lot of consumer goods companies are struggling because of the growth of private label substitutes that are getting better and better. And are being sold at much lower prices. And for them to actually get any meaningful volume growth, they have to discount or promote very aggressively and hope that the volume that comes through can drive profits higher. And that's not been happening for Reckitt. The shares have been woeful in terms of their performance. But the valuation now has come down. The shares are at a 10-year low. And the valuation is about 13 and a half times earnings on a forward basis. And again, for a business that is not growing. And whilst the legal cloud over it probably would stop anybody from coming and taking it over, these are the kind of situations that, with hindsight, people say, oh, I wish I'd looked at that back then. But the risk puts people off. But these shares are now trading at roughly half the rating of something like Procter & Gamble and Colgate-Palmolive. And it's very worrying, you know, in terms of what's happening with the company. The question is what's in the price? And, you know, you've seen probably getting close to £6 billion of market value wiped off this share in the last three or four trading days. And it's down at a level that, you know, it's, without this, you know, it looks very, very cheap. And if it gets into the hands of someone who can actually drive and reinvigorate it, it's something that, you know, would certainly pique the interest of either a trade buyer or a financial buyer. But most people are going to be scared stiff of it right now. So that's why I'm talking about it, because I think it raises a very interesting subject for investors, in that, you know, most people say, look, I'm going to run a mile from this because it's likely to get worse, and it could do. But then you start to look at, you know, what's in the share price, what's the valuation, what similar businesses trade on. I think it's interesting, but frightening.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEATS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEATS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I totally agree with you, Phil. I mean, yeah. We were talking about GSK not that long ago, and you raised the Zantac case, and I made the point that I'd looked at that when the share price fell off a cliff and said to someone, you know, this looks like a good buy at this price. These things happen to big companies. Don't lose your nerve. Buy when others are fearful. I think you've found another one that's a very similar case. I'd missed this completely. You know, to see Reckitt trading on that kind of PE, that looks very affordable to me. Yeah, really interesting.
What I was going to say was
one of the things that's happened in the past, and I'm not sure Johnson & Johnson got away with it, is that they're split off the entity that's got the problem or the current problem. So you mentioned Mead Johnson there and Enfamil. Would it not be a simple, might be just me being a simple person, to put the spin off or isolate that division and put that over there as an aside with a bunch of money, and then have the rest of the recognizer business over there, and then release that value and have that all that litigation and noise sitting over there as a separate entity?
I think it'd be very difficult to do that now.
Now it would be because you get a lower valuation for that side of the business.
I mean, the Johnson & Johnson case is, you know, probably a very good example here. I think they had an issue with, I think it was talcum powder.
Talcum powder, yeah. Yeah.
And the bill was big.
And it's going up.
So the problem that you face with an investor here is that you're still very, very early days in this story, and I think, you know, it could get a lot worse before it gets better. But you know, you have businesses there that are, okay, they've got some very strong brands that aren't growing very much. Well, I think they need a kick up the backside in terms of actually getting them to grow better. But I think this is a company that could just do nothing for a long time, actually just drift lower. So buying now is very, very brave. But, you know, if the profits of the rest of the business hold up, then the rating on this will just get so cheap that it can't be ignored, I think.
Okay. LG, any thoughts on your little spreadsheets you've got there going? Bells are going off going.
I probably fall into the kind of too scared camp if I was had to make a kind of decision on it, because I think, like Phil says, you know, these things can just go on and on and on and on, and there are like many gut-wrenching twists and turns on the way. But obviously, you know, to price this and know what it actually means is, very complicated thing. I will say I have looked at the ratings history, and this is a company which was AAA rated in September last year, and over a couple of months went down to an A rating, where it stayed. So it's there have been people, some of the investors that we follow, selling out a good few months, it was 6 months prior to all this blowing up. I'd keep an eye on the ratings personally, because you know it takes so much research and brain power and kind of specialist knowledge to come like make a judgment and place a bet on something like this. I think it's but what Phil says, you know, I think it's, you know, you can't yeah, people won't have made a proper judgment yet probably, because it's such a complicated thing to do. So you know, there could be opportunity. There's definitely risk. It's very interesting, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting company. It's one of them that we were talking about, I think probably last year, about it being quite lowly valued, and it's got even cheaper. So yeah, interesting stock there, Phil. I'm not brave enough for that one yet myself. I'll probably keep an eye on it and wait to see what the fund managers are doing. You know, I think there's going to be more of them exiting going forward and looking for, to use Algie's term and your term, better elite companies out elsewhere, you know, that are going to be generating better revenues with less noise around it. So so good stock, good company.
Also, Phil, I read your blog post on it, and I loved it. It's great. The blog's really good. Highly recommended.
Thank you, Algie.
Yeah, he's back in the frame now, Algie. He's back writing, mate, with his investing stuff. He can't get enough of it. You know, he's like, back on the horse, mate.
I'm sorry. I've just got to throw a quick rock here. For this prestigious writer that's written a book, could you not come up with a better title than Investing Stuff?
I've already pulled him on that, Henry, but that is a Yorkshireman. What do you expect? He ain't going to try hard, is he, on name stuff? It's a dog. What's his name? It's a dog. Yeah.
It's all about simplicity, Henry. You know, stuff about investing.
The gold is there. It's well worth looking up if you've not subscribed. I subscribed as soon as I heard about it, and you're keeping up a prolific writing rate. You're doing about 4 articles to every one of mine. So
yeah, I'm trying to keep it short and sweet, but yeah, it's enjoyable.
Excellent. Right, I'm conscious of the time we've got, guys, so I've caught between two stocks here, which one to choose. I'm going to go, because we've had a mortgage broker, I'm going to go for a comparison site instead, right? Commission-led, a leading UK comparison site, which is, of course, moneysupermarket.com. Market cap of 1.2 billion, price range of £2.24 to £2.88. Currently sitting at just shy of £2.90, sitting on a PE of 12.9 and a forward yield of 5.5. And I'm speaking about this because we've got a situation where we've been fighting inflation, energy costs and all the rest of it. Everyone's comparing the cost of insurance, services and all the other stuff that they do on the various websites and segments, etc. And right now, I think this is quite lowly valued for what I deem to be a tech stock. And sitting there on a PE of 12, it's come out and said, actually, we're doing really, really well, and we've done it without all the switching costs. Insurance has been one of our drivers, etc. And I think whilst it's lowly valued now, if they can carry on and accelerate their growth going forward, I think this is very, very cheap. And the likelihood is that somebody else, you know, will come and take this out at a significant premium. And if they take it out at 33% on average from where it is now, it's a £4 takeout, nearly £3.5 takeout. So I'm looking at this stock and thinking it's cheap. And I don't want to say much more than that. You know, everyone's traveling again, comparing prices for that. Home services, they're doing more work on the houses. Let's do some checks and value out on that. So that's all I want to say about it. You know, it's saving people money. Cost of living is going up. People want to save money. This is what it does on the tin. Keeping stuff simple, Phil. Yeah. What do? We save people money. We're a supermarket for saving you money. You know, the CEO is saying we save people 2.7 billion. You know, what better advertising can you get? But right now, it's relatively unloved. And it's still making, it came out in February saying record revenue at 432 million, despite no material revenue from energy switching. Insurance revenue soared by 28%. I was driving 11% of revenue growth. Only slight caveat I've got with it is that the full year dividend only went up 3%. And I'm always looking for nearer to 10 to show a little bit of confidence. But for me, I'm going to caveat that and say maybe they were looking to carry on accelerating their reduction regarding their debt, which I'm sure Henry would have pulled me up on that. But the debt's currently down at 19.8 million, having reduced that from 39. So it's going in the right direction. And if they carry on this sort of particular sort of move, in the next 12 months, maybe they'll be debt-free. And then they can start reinvesting some of that money elsewhere, making a bolt-on acquisition, or indeed increase their dividend. So that's my little stock there, little comparison site. It's not, what did I say the market cap was again? It's not too big, 1.2 billion.
I think Money Supermarkets changed a bit since I last looked at it, because I think they set up an insurance brokerage. But anyway, I think, yeah, being the master of takeouts, Pete, I think I can kind of totally see what you mean in terms of, you know, someone else coming along and buying it. Because always with Money Supermarket, what strikes me about it is that it's not a particularly good company to have public, because when things are going well, it spits out cash. It's got, you know, very, you know, small capital requirements from, you know, from what I don't know if this insurance thing has changed that, but from what I've known in the past, you know, it's great. It's like a right move type business model. It's come, you know, it's a cash machine when things are going well. But then you'll get these kind of changes to regulation, changes to the structure of markets, and suddenly, you know, everything's, you know, gone rubbish. And it's tried to diversify against travel, many other things to try and smooth stuff out. So, but it's, I don't think any of that's really worked. And definitely, in terms of what you said about the valuation, the market isn't buying it. But you know, if you look at it over the piece, it's actually, you know, a very impressive business in terms of you know, what it's able to do. But yeah, are the public markets really the right place for it, where everyone likes, you know, these kind of straight lines and you know, no nasty surprises. And the other thing from my little sheet that I'm looking at, it's got a 8% forecast free cash flow yield. So anyone who did buy it, you know, depending on the premium, obviously, you know, based on that, you know, would kind of, you know, get a very nice return, very nice cash return, as long as that's representative of, you know, what they manage to get out of it in the years ahead. But it's it looks very interesting. And I guess the things I would look at, you know, first off is come, you know, what's going on in all those markets that it's serving, and what all the regulatory stories are, and, you know, what they mean, and try and figure that out. But also, I noticed forecasts have held up well over the last 12 months, which is, you know, seems encouraging. And there's, you know, growth forecasts, which is very nice, obviously.
No, thank you. I mean, for me, the thing that jumps out for me on here, using the SharePad metrics, is that return on equity is 40.1, right? And that, to me, gives you a reasonable margin of safety. So when one aspect of its segments aren't working, another aspect is being picked up. And they've done that, you know, the record revenues just recently in Feb, despite them not having a material energy switching sort of revenues coming on, because obviously it's all commission-led, and they managed to reduce the debt. So I'm looking at it and thinking, I prefer to buy nearer to the 52-week lows, Algie, as you know, with a margin, with a significant margin of safety. And for me, it's a £4 stock all day long, and it's currently sitting nearer to £2.30. So yeah. I haven't bought it yet, ladies and gents, but I've got it on my radar. Nobody wants it right now. People are still selling it. At some point or other, I might well look to buy it. Henry, any thoughts, Henry, on that one?
Yeah, I used to own Money Supermarket, and I sold it last year. So, like Algie said, they started getting into trouble. The share price was going down and down and down. The debt was going the wrong way back then. Revenue wasn't doing what I wanted. I'd held it for about 3 years, and I took the decision I didn't want to own any more of this. I didn't want to own what I'd got. I'm cutting my losses, and I'm running. And oddly enough, earlier this year, I started looking at it again and going, this kind of looks like a more attractive business now. They seem to be sorting themselves out. And it's for those listeners that haven't spotted it, Peter wrote an article on SharePad a few weeks ago about 8 psychological flaws that investors have. And I'm suffering from one myself here, which is not re-examining ideas that I've thrown out and sold out of. And I've got this big sort of blocker mentally going, well, I got rid of this, I don't want to go back to it. And I think I might need to get over that and, you know, just go back to this as a fresh idea, because certainly from what you've just said, from what Algie's just said, I might be missing up on a diamond here.
Yes, I mean, the share price could go lower, Henry, you know, the article, 8 common mistakes, it's usually when we sell something and it goes higher, we're reluctant to chase it. You know, we're like, no, I sold it at £2, it's now £5. There's no way I'm going to buy it. But if you sold it at £3, which is potentially what you sold it at, you know, given you sold it last year, it's dropped all the way down to £2.20 now. Has it settled? Has it sorted itself out? I don't know. But right now, it looks better. It looks good value to me. I'm not sure what Phil thinks. Phil, are you going to give it a Yorkshireman thumbs up or a boot in the where it needs talc?
I really like this one. I've actually been using it as a customer in recent weeks. Been hugely impressed. And I think, you know, anyone who's had car insurance renewal quote or home insurance or pet insurance, the increases in insurance premiums are eye-watering. And the money that you can save by shopping around is massive. I'll give you an example, actually. I have an 18-year-old son who has a car. And anybody who has similar age children will know that insuring them to drive a car is eye-wateringly expensive. And he had a renewal quote through from a well-known insurer for £3,500 about 6 weeks ago. I went on Money Supermarket and got another very well-known insurer to get it for £1,400 with the same level of cover.
Wow.
I've used it again just on insuring my dog, and, you know, halved it against my renewal. So I can see why. And I'm someone who historically hasn't gone on these price comparison sites and has gone, you know, direct. But I think I'm going to be using them for all my renewals this year. And I can see the momentum in the insurance business of Money Supermarket potentially outperforming again. It could actually, if you're looking for a source of share price appreciation, it's usually a forecast upgrade, the company upgrading guidance. And I think that the momentum behind switching insurance is so strong now that could happen. The company's finances are in great shape. I think they're going to be net cash by the end of the year. And this is essentially like, you know, it's not quite as, you know, insanely profitable as like a Rightmove or an Auto Trader, but it's a similar type business model. It's a website business. So you have a lot of fixed costs. And so incremental revenues, a lot of that just drops straight through for profits for shareholders. So the economics and the business model are very, very attractive. I like it. I think the valuation's good. There's a nice dividend on it. Generates loads of cash. Doesn't need to invest a lot to keep doing what it does. Mainly marketing expenditure, bit of IT expenditure. But yeah, a really good company. And if I was allowed to own shares, because obviously Algie and I have to sign up for you know, codes of conduct and rules and regulations about owning stuff. And the two companies that I work for, one of the two of my customers say I can't own, or I can't write about shares that I own. So owning individual shares is actually quite difficult for people like me and Algie. But this is one that if I could, I'd be looking at it very strongly, giving it a lot of consideration.
That's a strong endorsement. It comes from you as a customer as well, so I appreciate that, Phil. And sorry, Henry, were you going to say something about Algie? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to say that's also such a great point about the potential for there to be an upgrade cycle, because, I mean, that, you know, you could, if that starts to kick in, the upgrades probably will be fairly meaty for the reasons that Phil's spelt out. And when you've got a valuation which really isn't very demanding, then that, you know, you get the double whammy of the re-rating with the upgrades. And I mean, that's, you know, a wonderful thing. And also the funny thing with Money Supermarket that I've found is that people tend to forget that it's not a right move when it's doing really well. People tend to, you know, kind of price it more like one of those, you know, Right Move Auto Trader, where you've got the network effect, which kind of, and a more defensive business. So yeah, you could, that could be a very special dynamic if that were to happen.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you, gents, for that one. I feel quite blessed now. I feel like I found an elite company I didn't even know I found. So that's quite a shock for me. Oh gosh. Right, I'm conscious of the time here. Algie, I want to give you and Phil a minute to just press these books for me. So tell us about your book, because Harriman House are coming back on board as a sponsor of the challenge, and I'm going to be asking them to endorse yours and Phil's book in amongst the 15. So just tell us why people should choose this book when they win their monthly prize, please.
Oh, terrific. I guess the main thing with my book is that it focuses on, you know, empirically are the four, the four best ways you can go about approaching the market if you want to have a winning strategy. But it kind of explores them through kind of stock screens, how you can understand the market through stock screens. And so it gives you a very systematic way of pulling out ideas which kind of fit those four briefs. And also, you know, I kind of hope that, you know, the kind of looking at the four different strategies, it kind of, you know, that is quite surprising why they work, and the kind of psychology involved with, you know, what people miss, and why, you know, doing something, you know, like buying a share which has low volatility and pays decent dividends, why that can be a strategy that wins, and why it's distinct from something, you know, from the thing, you know, the kind of blanket idea of buying high yields or something like that. I'd say that's probably its strong point. And also it's got a lot of kind of just practical stuff in terms of how to read accounts, how to understand ratios, you know, how to do all the kind of, like, you know, the stuff that you need to know about, and the kind of mistakes that you need not to make in order to give yourself the best chance at investing in individual shares. That's my pitch.
No, and the bit I would add to that as well, Algie, is that there is I wrote this with you, for you, should I say, there's a bit in there, there's a complete thread throughout the book regarding investing psychology, which is a lovely undercurrent of thinking regarding every move you make, sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think you can only, you know, you can only have a strategy that works if the psychology is right. You have to be playing, you know, you're, that's the only thing which really gives a private investor a genuine edge. That is, you know, they call it the behavioral edge. And it's, yeah, all about psychology.
Brilliant. Philip, I know you hate it. We're going to make you do it as well. Come on. We've spoken, that the book we were just spoken about is called Four Ways to Beat the Market by Algie Hull. We're now going to ask Phil to endorse his own book, which he hates, and he's very uncomfortable at the minute. How to Pick Quality Shares, the three-step process to selecting profitable stocks. Go, Phil.
Okay. In a nutshell, this is a book which tells the reader how to analyze the finances of a company and what to look for to identify really, really good companies. How to avoid bad ones, and then how to sort of value companies. So the three steps are, you know, looking at good companies, avoiding bad, and then what to pay for them. And that's it. And it's I think the reason I wrote it is a lot of books on financial analysis are very much directed to the American reader. There's not much written that's been written, or there's been more now. I mean, Algie's written a book. Steve Clapham has written a very, very good book as well on analyzing finances. So there are more UK books coming on. But yeah, it's a financial analysis book, which hopefully doesn't make your eyes glaze over and makes it understandable and tells you what it actually means in plain English. And yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for doing that, Phil. Now, Algie, we can't, you know, thank you enough for coming on the show, but I want you to do one more favour for me, if I may, right?
Absolutely. I should be thanking you. I've loved it.
No, mate. Listen, you've always been a good supporter of this show, but I'm going to ask you a big favour now. Right, there's myself, obviously Phil, and you know, we've got this young whippersnapper here we can't keep up with called you know, Henry Viola Hare. We're all three of us really are just absolutely mad keen regarding investing, right? And you've been doing it for absolutely ages now, and you've written an excellent book on it. With regards to the CityWire platform, which we're trying to get everyone to actually go and pay a visit to, right, and have a look at elite companies, right? What, you know, if you're going to give me one sentence, what are we missing out on regarding being so UK-centric? Because elite companies span the whole globe that you guys are looking at. We should be looking at it more.
I mean, opportunity, I think, is the answer. Where, I've been amazed going from having a kind of UK perspective to a global perspective, just how much opportunity there is there. And I can't believe previously when I've been writing and trying to come up with ideas for readers, kind of what a small pond I've been fishing in. And the other thing to say is when I when I began the CityWire project, I was kind of quite intimidated by the thought of, you know, having to look at overseas companies and come get my head around all these, you know, stocks I'd never heard of. And I was so delighted with how straightforward and how transferable those skills that you learn by looking at one market are to other markets. And it's not all the same, but it's kind of, it's really a lot easier than I'd ever envisaged. And some of the public information out there, which is what, you know, most private investors need to think about, is brilliant. Like 10Ks in the US are really amazing documents. So opportunity though. Back to one word.
No, it's brilliant. You said that. I think that the thing I would pull out of that as well, and I've been fearful of it as well, is that we feel intimidated by that new market. Or America feels safe, so I'll go there. So I'll go and have a look at a couple of stocks there. Canada, Australia, anything beyond that, and we're like, oh. And it's, you know, if the information's there and it's, you know, and the policies are in place and it's safe enough to do so, and you've got a good platform to actually make the FX charges and it's not too, you know, expensive, then why not? If he's going to choose the best companies. I think I've been in the situation where I'm doing so much research and it's like, oh, you know, 100 hours later, I'm going, I'm not buying that. You know, I could have just spent a tenth of that time and picked an elite company that could have passed far superior performance, you know?
I mean, you know, with the elite companies, I mean, that is not a silver bullet, but you know they've had their tars kicked kind of thing. So, you know, if a whole load of top investors own them, hopefully, you know, a few of them at least have done their homework.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, thank you ever so much for coming on, Algy. Really, really appreciate it. For ladies and gents that haven't found Algy yet, you need to follow him on Twitter and via the @CityWire Twitter account. And you can find him at Algy Hall on Twitter. And you can sign up and subscribe to all of the different elite companies and CityWire newsletters that go out weekly, fortnightly, annually, quarterly, all year round. Right, I'm going to say goodbye to Phil. I think he's going to watch something on the telly or get his tea. I'm going to say a big thank you to Henry Viola Hare at HC Viola as well for being on the podcast. You've been listening to me, Peter Higgins at Conquest 3 on Twitter. But big up, Algy Hall. Go and buy the book and the books from Phil and Algy. And that's a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing 1, 2, 3. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless you all. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Phil. Henry, LG, bye-bye.
Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.